New Galaxy Broadcasting proudly presents Integrative Hermetic Health with Hugo Rodier, MD. In this program, we explore a powerful new paradigm for health from the standpoint of integrative medicine. In his practice, Dr. Rodier integrates the ancient Hermetic art and the enduring role of food as medicine with modern nutrition, but also allowing for the wide range of important health practices, including truly valuable medical discoveries, chiropractic, acupuncture, homeopathic and herbal medicine. In this program, Hugo Rodier, an expert in intestinal health and nutrition, will help the audience discover an approach that focuses on actual cures, not the masking of the elegant simplicity of many health solutions for the sake of profit. Profit too long has been an overriding motive of the pharmaceutical companies, and sometimes, sadly, by many in the medical establishment today. This is Johnny Bluestar. We're back on the Integrative Hermetic Health Show with our host, Dr. Hugo Rodier. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning, Johnny.
You know, I was listening to the town hall with Marion Williamson, who is widely known as an author, sort of encouraging people to understand themselves and look at things differently. I'm particularly a specialist in The Course of Miracles, which is kind of a spiritual book that some people think is really important. But now she's running for president. And I heard her talk about healthcare system. Just briefly, let me play a clip from what she said.
We have a lot more questions about what you would do as president. I want to bring in Vanessa Scott, an employee benefits attorney from Maryland who specializes in issues related to the Affordable Care Act. Vanessa?
Hi, Marianne. In addition to being an Affordable Care Act attorney, I am also a cancer survivor. So the state of the U.S. healthcare system is very important to me and to my family. What is your plan for making sure that the protections enacted by the Affordable Care Act are preserved, specifically the pre-existing condition protections and also the protections related to annual and lifetime limit restrictions?
I think not only must they be preserved, they must be augmented. I'd like to see a Medicare for All type of plan that's presented as a public option. I think a lot of people would gravitate to that. And I think in addition, if people want to have private insurance, if they like the private insurers or want to augment it, then they should be able to. To me, the issue is not just the technicality. The issue is not just how are we going to do that. The issue is why are we going to do that. The reason we are going to do that is because you are a citizen of the United States. You should not have to worry about any of this in the richest country in the world. No citizen in the richest country of the world should have to be worrying about this. And by the way, the stress that so many people feel based on what will I do if I get sick? What will I do if one of my children gets sick? The fact that 40% of all Americans are struggling on a daily basis to make those basic costs of health care and rent and transportation and food causes sickness. That's part of the stress, the economic stress, and the fact we don't have health care and the fact we don't know how we're going to pay our college loans and we don't know how we're going to pay our kids go to college is part of the unhealthy aspect. So what we do with health care in the United States is that once people are already sick, we're talking about how to provide health care. But we need to have a deeper conversation in this country. We don't really have a health care system. We have a sickness care system. Because what we're saying is, okay, once people get sick, what do we do about it? When I'm president, we're going to be talking about how to create greater health from the beginning. And that's going to save a lot of money, by the way. There is so much about our diet, so much about our lifestyle, and so much about the economic stress that actually causes this very conditions that produce illness. That's why if we're really going to talk about health in America, we have to talk about our chemical policies. We have to talk about the foods, the toxins, the carcinogens in our food. We have to talk about our environmental policies. So we need to go a lot deeper. The old politics talks about how we're going to take care of you if you get sick. The new politics and what you're going to have if I'm president, we're going to talk about how you might live well.
After hearing this, I was moved enough to look up everything she said. I'd like to read part of it and then go into the details of her program, and I'd like you to chime in and see what you think of what she says, okay?
All right.
This is Healthcare in America by her. The biggest problem with America's healthcare system is that it is not a healthcare system so much as a sickness care system. It reflects an outdated perspective on health and healing in which too little attention is given to the actual cultivation of health and prevention of disease. That's pretty clear, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. We've known about this for a long time, so she's picking up on good authors to address that?
I think it's, yeah, it's at least she is. The rest are not really doing that well with that. They don't even mention it. She says the shift to a genuine healthcare system would involve attention to environmental, agricultural, chemical, and nutritional factors, which America's current corporate-dominated system of governance would presumably resist. Yet if America is to deal with our serious issues involving chronic disease and obesity, we must look deeply at the causes of disease and not simply their treatment.
That's huge. I mean, and she said it in the first paragraph. Why are we not doing that? Because we're catering to the people who profit from a disease care system. And so that's why, you know, most politicians have to please the money people, or they're not getting anywhere. So I don't know if she'll get anywhere with this, with the truth.
I don't know if she's going to get anywhere, but at least it's being articulated by someone in that position.
This we've known about forever and in good journals. It's just a politician saying it clearly, you know, that we don't hear as much.
Well, the Trump administration has done a lot to wreck everything, the health environment. but here's what she says about it, that the Environmental Protection Agency needs to have its power restored as protector of our environment and thus our health. The Clean Air Act and Clean Water Act must be restored in full, and bans on dangerous pesticides once again vigorously established and enforced. Genetically engineered food should be labeled. The Food and Drug Administration needs to have its power restored so they can once again guard the American people from toxic substances that should not be on our shelves. And our children's food, particularly school lunches, should be far more filled with healthy ingredients. Until America comes to terms with how much we have acquiesced to the many unhealthy practices that should be considered unlawful, but which are currently allowed in order to increase corporate profits, we will continue to have a less than meaningful discussion of how as a society, we must provide health care.
Wow. You know, I could have written this article.
I know. You already did. Maybe she's reading you. How many blogs do you have saying this?
Yeah, I have written this article in my books and my blogs and my newsletters. You know, it's not that we're just drinking from the same waters. You know, I wouldn't presume that she read my book.
But somebody's drinking from these waters that actually has got a CNN town hall. That's something. Even if no matter what you think of CNN or the rest of her political positions, this is some amazing thing here.
Well, I hope she gets some traction at some point, at least with this issue. Like you said, you know, I'm not familiar with the rest of her platform, but yeah, on this basis alone, if the other platforms and stances that she has are not too disagreeable, yeah, I would vote for her.
Okay, so let's go on a little bit more. The issue of healthcare in America strikes at a key question regarding America's first principles. Lincoln said, if we're to be a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, and it's ours to decide now whether or not we agree.
I quoted that a million times, Johnny, but then I twist it around and I say that our government is of the corporations, by the corporations, and for the corporations.
I agree with that. She further goes on to say, a government for the people is just that, applying the resources of our government to providing such a fundamental right as access to health care should be a given, as it is in all the other advanced democracies. Those who promote the idea that market forces alone should govern our society have promulgated propagandistic themes to dissuade the American people from claiming the right to universal health care. Words like socialist, too expensive, and nanny state are used to distract us from realizing that we're the government of and by and for the people, which also happens to be in the richest country of the world. Universal health care should be seen as the most natural thing in the world.
Well, as you know, Johnny, I'm a Francophile because of upbringing and genetics, and I get beat up for it quite a bit. But to me, France, as much as they can be arrogant and elitist, yes, and grumpy, yes, the liberté, égalité, fraternité, you know, yeah. Does it ring a bell here? I mean, we beat up on France because it's too feminine and too socialist. Really? No. They have their capitalistic problems as well. But the point being is that if you listen to the French news, it's all about the people. you know, how the people need to rise again. In fact, the movement, the Gilets Jaunes, it's what it is. It's a bit perverted because they're destroying private property. So I don't condone that. But the point being that we're so skewed to the right. We are a fascist government country. Fascist meaning corporations have taken over. That any attempt to swing back to the people is viewed as socialist. It's very upsetting.
Yeah, it's a misunderstanding of really what the term means.
Exactly.
I mean, if you take the term to the ultimate, you know, what socialists could mean in the ultimate sense, it could be government ownership of all business.
Exactly.
Democratic socialism could be called democratic capitalism as well, as far as I'm concerned. It just has certain socialist tendencies, just like any government is going to have capitalist and socialist tendencies. It's going to be a blend. Even China is. I mean, there's a blend of those things going on, perhaps not one we appreciate, but still it's not purely socialist. Anyway, I'm going to, go ahead.
It's a balance. We need to strike a balance between strength and wisdom, which is a big tenet in integrative health.
This is Johnny Bluestar, CEO of New Galaxy Enterprises, a media content development company. The original productions by Amazon, Hulu, and Netflix in particular has opened up a new and powerful form of television that has both global income and still unexplored profit potential as convergence between offline and online media continues to blossom. We can help persons needing creative help to turn their ideas for television pilots into actionable, marketable scripts. There's probably nothing more exciting in the field of entertainment than these new vistas online as that capacity crosses more and more to the big screen. And the opportunities for instantaneous online projections of any type of media in that perennially popular venue. To learn more about New Galaxy, see samples of our work, or talk to us about your project, please go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com and fill out the contact form. Patriots Act is a Brent Marks legal thriller written by Kenneth Eade, a novelist and attorney, often appearing on Threshold Radio. It's about Ahmed, a naturalized U.S. citizen formerly of Iraq, who is sent to Guantanamo Bay detention camp with no real knowledge of a crime he has committed. Brent Marks, a California attorney, is originally hired by Ahmed's wife to fight for his release. The novel opens with a convincing mock execution, a mode of torture meant to break down a prisoner in a brutal and traumatic way that foreshadows Ahmed's actual death in the hands of his accusers.
Ahmed felt the butt of the rifle strike his spine as his knees buckled and he hit the floor.
Move faster, Haji. Up against the wall. Stop there. Good. Listen up. My name is Sergeant Brown. You're here because you refused to cooperate in the interrogations. The decision has been made to execute you by firing squad.
Wait, I'm an American citizen.
Ahmed felt the black bag rip from his head and for the first time faced his aggressors. He found himself facing a man in camouflage fatigues, holding an M16 to his chest. Beside him, an 8-man firing squad with their rifles in ready position.
I have the right to talk to an attorney. This is all a big mistake.
Brown fastened a leather strap around Ahmed's waist, pinning his spine to a wooden post.
Yeah, a big mistake. You should have cooperated when we asked you about your superiors in Al-Qaeda.
I don't know anyone in Al-Qaeda.
Do you have any last statement, Haji?
But I
repeat, do you have any last statement?
I'm not a terrorist. I'm an American citizen. I've a right to a lawyer and a trial. You've denied me these rights. You will answer to God for your crimes.
I think you can see who has all the rights here. Ready? Aim!
The 8 pointed their rifles at Ahmed. Shivering uncontrollably, Ahmed's knees gave way, and he hung on the post like a man crucified.
Fire!
The deafening explosion of the 8 rifles was the last thing Ahmed heard. He felt the bullets hit his flesh and his body crumpled forward, hanging lifelessly from the post like a scarecrow.
Before we begin our discussion, I'd like to play an excerpt from the first meeting of Congress on Medicare for All as the House Rules Committee Chairman introduces the first speaker.
Our first witness is Adi Bakken. Artie is a lawyer and an organizer with the Center for Popular Democracy and the founder of the Be a Hero PAC. He helped design and draft policy proposals to enhance the quality of low-wage jobs in New York City, including the right to paid sick days, regulation of major retailers, and unionization of the car wash industry. He graduated from Yale Law School and Columbia College cum laude. And we are, as I said in my opening statement, we are deeply honored to have you here, Mr. Barkin, and the floor is yours.
Chairman McGovern and members of the committee, thank you for inviting me to testify today. My name is Audie Barkin. I am 35 years old and I live in Santa Barbara, California with my brilliant wife Rachel and our beautiful toddler Carl. She is an English professor at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and I am an organizer at the Center for Popular Democracy and the Be a Hero Project. I earned my bachelor's degree from Columbia University with a major in economics and my law degree from Yale Law School. For 20 years, since I was a freshman on my high school debate team, I have been giving speeches and presentations on topics like healthcare reform and the federal budget. But never before have I given a speech without my natural voice. Never before have I had to rely on a synthetic voice to lay out my arguments, convey my most passionately held beliefs, tell the details of my personal story. 3 years ago, Rachel and I felt like we had reached the mountaintop. We had fulfilling careers, a wonderful community of friends and family, and a smiling, chubby infant boy. We could see decades of happiness stretching out before us. The sun was shining and there was not a cloud in sight. And then, out of the clear blue sky, we were struck by lightning. ALS. A mysterious neurological disease with no cure and no good treatment. A life expectancy of 3 to 4 years. Most of its victims are in their 50s and 60s. I was 32. Every month since my diagnosis, my motor neurons have died out, my muscles have disintegrated, and I have become increasingly paralyzed. I am speaking to you through this computer because my diaphragm and tongue are simply not up to the task. Although my story is tragic, it is not unique. Indeed, in many ways, it is not so rare. Jennifer Epps Addison, the president of my organization, is sitting next to me. Like me, her husband was struck at a young age by a neurological disease. Multiple sclerosis. 10% of Americans have a serious disability. Every family is eventually confronted with serious illness or accidents. On the day we are born and on the day we die, and on so many days in between, all of us need medical care. And yet in this country, the wealthiest in the history of human civilization, we do not have an effective or fair or rational system for delivering that care. I will not belabor the point, because you and your constituents are well aware of the problems, high costs, bad outcomes, mind-boggling bureaucracy, racial disparities, bankruptcies, geographic inequities, and obscene profiteering. The ugly truth is this. Healthcare is not treated as a human right in the United States of America. This fact is outrageous. And it is far past time that we change it. Say it loud for the people in the back, healthcare is a human right. For my family, although we have comparatively good private health insurance, ALS now means paying out of pocket for almost 24-hour home care. This costs us $9,000 every month. The alternative is for me to go on Medicare and move into a nursing home, away from my wife and my son. So we are cobbling together the money from friends and family and supporters all over the country. But this is an absurd way to run a healthcare system. GoFundMe is a terrible substitute for smart congressional action. Like so many others, Rachel and I have had to fight with our insurer, which has issued outrageous denials instead of covering the benefits we paid for. We have so little time left together, and yet our system forces us to waste it dealing with bills and bureaucracy. That is why I am here today, urging you to build a more rational, fair, efficient, and effective system. I am here today to urge you to enact Medicare for All. There are three simple reasons why Medicare for All is the right solution, the only solution, to what ails the American healthcare system. I will summarize them here, but I urge you to read the fantastic testimony submitted by the National Nurses United for more details. First, Medicare for All will deliver to everyone living in America the high-quality care that we deserve. The law will provide comprehensive care, including primary and hospital care, dental, vision, reproductive, and mental health care. We will all be allowed to see the doctors and specialists we want. And, crucially, the program will provide for long-term services and supports that will allow people like me to stay in our homes and communities, with the people we love. This will dramatically improve life for the tens of millions of people whose families include older or disabled people. Second, Medicare for All will save the American people enormous sums of money. Under the program, there will be no premiums, no deductibles, and no copays. That means that we will no longer need to choose between paying the rent and filling a prescription. It means we will no longer delay necessary care until it is tragically late and tragically expensive. It means that we won't have to worry every year when our employer announces the new rates. It means that we can finally start to eliminate the atrocious racial and economic disparities that destroy so many lives, that rob our communities of so much dignity, that strip us all of our common humanity. Any proposal that maintains financial barriers to care, any proposal that continues to charge patients exorbitant copays, deductibles, and premiums will necessarily leave people out. Any proposal that maintains the for-profit health insurance system will require that some people don't get the health care they need. Without the generous support of my family and friends, this would include me. Crucially, Medicare for All is the only way to make our health care system more efficient. Over the past 3 years, I have seen firsthand how the current system creates absurdly wasteful cost shifting, delays, billing disputes, rationing, and worry. Administrative waste is costing us hundreds of billions of dollars every year. Medicare for All will streamline the entire system, letting doctors and nurses focus on delivering care instead of on paperwork. As a single-payer program, Medicare for All will be able to eliminate immoral price gouging by pharmaceutical and device companies. The fundamental truth is that too many corporations make too much money off of our illnesses, and they are spending gazillions of dollars lobbying and campaigning and fighting to stop us from building something better. It is very important to emphasize the following point: these cost savings are only possible through a genuine Medicare for All system. Other proposals to increase health insurance coverage, such as those that would make Medicare compete with private insurance, would not facilitate administrative and billing savings. There are many other major benefits to Medicare for All, as detailed in the written testimony submitted by the nurses and others. But my time to deliver this testimony is running out. And, in a much more profound sense, my time to deliver this message to the American people is running out as well. So I want to end on this third and final note. Our time on this earth is the most precious resource we have. A Medicare for All system will save all of us tremendous time. For doctors and nurses and providers, it will mean more time giving high-quality care. And for patients and our families, it will mean less time dealing with a broken healthcare system and more time doing the things we love, together. Some people argue that although Medicare for All is a great idea, we need to move slowly to get there. But I needed Medicare for All yesterday. Millions of people need it today. The time to pass this law is now. Winning this reform will not be easy. The moneyed interests will do everything in their power to stop us. And yet, despite these obstacles and despite the personal challenges that I face, I sit before you today a hopeful man, a hopeful husband, and a hopeful father. I am hopeful because right now, there is a mass movement of people from all over this country, rising up. Nurses, doctors, patients, caregivers, family members, we are all insisting that there is a better way to structure our society, a better way to care for one another, a better way to use our precious time together. And so my closing message is not for the members of this committee. It is for the American people. Join us in this struggle. Be a hero for your family, your communities, your country. Come give your passion and your energy and your precious time to this movement. It is a battle worth waging, and a battle worth winning. For my son Carl, for your children, and for our children's children. We have a once-in-a-generation opportunity to win what we really deserve. No more half measures. No more health care for some. We can win Medicare for all. This is our Congress. This is our democracy. And this is our future for the making.
We're back with Dr. Rodier on the Integrative Hermetic Health Show. Currently, we are discussing some of the very powerful ideas of Marianne Williamson, a presidential candidate, clearly part of what she calls the transformative movement. Before the break, you were speaking of balance being one of the main tenets of integrative health. Let's see if Williamson's overall views stand up to this. Well, I'm going to give you some of her recommendations. She says, I robustly support high-quality universal coverage for every American, including a Medicare for all in the model. In addition, my administration would champion the following policy changes to help change our ill-advised trajectory, and maybe we could discuss them. There's a bunch of them. Require our healthcare system to reimburse medical professionals for a broader array of lifestyle and nutrition support focused on preventing disease and/or addressing root causes. Maybe you could
that's
comment
beautiful.
On this.
You know, that's I see a lot of people who pay out of pocket to see me to hear about lifestyle nutrition, which is 90% of health, by the way, according to an article in the JAMA. And these poor people don't get reimbursed. And it's not so much that I need the patients to come in. I'm doing fine. I just feel bad for patients that paying $500, $1,000 premium for insurance still have to come and see me to get better.
Yeah, it's bizarre, but it's a reality. Okay, longer visits with doctors and or their support staff to better equip patients with skills necessary to make lifestyle changes. And that's something you voluntarily did, didn't
you? My visits aren't limited. I don't put a limit on my visits. When the patient is done, we're done. And so I block out huge chunks of time for my patients. And my office, as you know, it looks more like a psychologist or a professor's office.
Yeah.
Because that's what people need. It's an environment where they can change within. And you don't need gadgets and marble floors or aseptic walls with posters of somebody's butt. No, you need a poster of a countryside, a poster, a picture of Van Gogh or something that touches your soul. Of course, we need the other clinical approach as well. I'm not saying that we should get rid of the marble offices, you know.
Yeah, we can have a few of them.
Right.
maybe better couches, more comfortable
right.
couches. Well, okay, so there's a bunch of these. Provide patients with more robust, ongoing support from nutritionists, health coaches, therapists, and mental health exercise specialists and other peripheral lifestyle treatment providers. Well, you've always been a, like other integrative physicians, I believe, you've always felt welcoming towards their support. Isn't that correct?
Absolutely. Well, that's pretty much what I do.
But I mean, in other words, if a person really needed like very close monitoring of their food and exercise, they might get a certain kind of coach, right?
Absolutely.
And I know that that I think this is, could be very beneficial to them, but if they don't get the first understanding of what they need, doesn't help. And that's why it's great that that a doctor would actually recommend people like that.
Yes. And it's even more powerful if the doctor does it himself or herself.
Yes.
Because by you punting, it gives him might give the impression that you don't think it's as important.
Right. I understand that. Integrate world-class technology and systems for better collaboration and cost savings among healthcare providers.
I know where she's coming from here, but let me just be the devil's advocate.
Okay.
I believe that cutting back on technology and the damned electronic health records would be better. And so I view technology with a jaundiced eye. I know where she's coming from, okay? But if you want cost savings, we should scale back on a lot of the cluttering technology that's causing huge burnout in physicians.
So we would recommend the efficient use of technology.
Well,
efficient, cost-effective technology to help patients.
I think we need to streamline the electronic health records because it's creating a lot of problems, unintended consequences. We thought that we would communicate better and all that, but it's increasing problems and cost. And so I'm not smart enough to figure out how to do it, but I'm very happy with my chicken scratches on my charts that tell me everything I need to know. I don't need to copy paste pages and pages and pages of useless information.
Okay, well, let me read another one here. Fund programs in all our educational systems, pre-kindergarten through college, designed to teach nutrition and lifestyle skills to help cultivate long-term health.
And of course, while we're at it, we should stop corporations from planting vending machines in our schools. They grease the palms of principals and school districts with thousands of dollars to plant their infernal machines. So if you are educating these kids, then they get out at break and go straight to the vending machine to get soda pop and crackers and candy bars. What are you doing? So we need to kick the sellers out of our temples, educational temples.
Restrict the marketing of overly processed and sugary foods to our children.
Yeah, that's part of the equation there. We know that it increases consumption, the infernal commercials, but those vending machines that I was just talking about is a huge part of the problem in our schools.
Stop subsidies for agricultural production of unhealthy foods like high fructose corn syrup and hydrogenated fats, and incentivize and subsidize farmers, ranchers, and food companies for more healthy food production, making it more affordable and available.
Well, that's a farm bill, the infernal farm bill that I hate. And so we are paying farmers to grow crap. You know, it follows.
And these aren't little farmers either, are they? They're mostly very high-level, high-tech farmers.
Yeah, we call it big food, corporate food.
Big food, yeah. So that's, you know, some people would say that, you know, we've got social welfare for corporations,
exactly.
Especially ones who don't need it, like the oil companies. Shape food policies using cutting-edge public health science instead of following the lead of lobbyists for industries whose sole focus is profit.
Amen. Where have I heard that before?
Well, I think she may be listening to our programs. I'm not sure. Secure and expand the role of the EPA and the FDA to keep toxins out of our environment and food supplies. There I have a problem. Because, yes, I'd like the FDA to have a certain role in that. But I believe that the FDA is responsible for putting plenty of toxics into our medicine.
Yeah, she needs to address who's funding the FDA instead of making a blank statement like that. I agree.
Take a national look at stress levels and develop ways to lower stress societally. That means adding vacation time, protecting a manageable work week, and taking a close look at how our electronic devices impact our lives. Just as the FDA is supposed to make recommendations about how we eat. I'm sorry. Just as the FDA is supposed to make recommendations about how we eat, the FDA should study and make constructive recommendations on how we consume data from our phones and devices.
Yeah, I totally agree. She should have added that it really took... really cut stress levels, we should get the hell out of other countries.
Oh, really? You mean murdering thousands of civilians and feeling a little bit guilty about it might be affecting some people?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing to actually be involved in this epic distortion of justice. We need to develop healthy habits at a community level. Towns and cities can and should look collectively at how active their populations are and institute more ways to increase physical activity through walking paths, bike paths, and community events. The diet of entire cities should be reviewed, as well as ways that communities can contribute to one another's daily health.
Well, you know, the American way that Cheney fought so hard to defend is flawed. And, you know, all the gas... the cheap gas that we had in the 60s and 70s led to urban sprawl. And with it came all kinds of problems because we relied so much on cars. But now we're turning the corner and you're seeing these livable communities where people walk to work, walk to shop, walk everywhere. You know, these little islands, communities that are self-contained,
yeah,
pretty much. You know, that's what Europe learned. Europe is older, has learned certain lessons. And in many, many big cities in Europe, you don't need a car. It's kind of like New York. You know, New York is getting there where very few people own a car.
Yeah, I remember because I lived there, and I had a car, and it was a pain in the neck. It was really, I couldn't really use it that often, and then I was with a garage that basically, after I wasn't there for a while, would kind of lose it, and I couldn't get it out for like hours. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau should investigate how hospitals overcharge patients, and the Justice Department Antitrust Division should explore ways to remove as much of the profit motive out of medicine as we can.
Profit motive in medicine? No.
That's what she says. I find this, I do believe that antitrust is a very important part of our culture. It should be. It's because unrestrained capitalism is a very bad thing. And I do think that the pharmaceutical industry and so forth, some of those things could use some antitrust, except I don't want them to exist in the first place. So not in their current form.
Well, the word collusion comes to mind, which is pretty much in vogue. You know, these big corporations are colluding with each other. And Rockefeller famously said it himself. Competition is not for the big boys. It's only for the peons like us. When they get up to a certain stratospheric level, they don't compete. They meet in smoke-filled rooms to fix prices, and then they make more money at our expense.
Yeah, and that's the antitrust Trump methodology.
Right.
Meet in private rooms and forget about dividing things. Let's all work together to screw the 99%.
We need another Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah. Well, he had some real understanding of that part of things, I think.
Well, it's robber barons. That's what it is. And that's what he called them, and that's what they still are, robber barons.
The Center for Disease Control should invest more research into preventing disease rather than treating symptoms and look broadly at vulnerabilities in the system, like avoiding pandemics by encouraging healthy disease avoidance behaviors.
That's exactly what I say every time a patient calls me scared about Ebola and the avian flu and the Asian flu. And please stop. You know, if we just strengthen our immune system, we don't have to live in so much fear. I'm not saying you are 100% immune, but you dramatically decrease the risk of disease, particularly infectious diseases, if you eat your veggies.
We also need to find non-pharmacological ways to treat mental health issues and to take all mental health issues as seriously as physical issues and reduce the stigma of mental health illnesses so that more will seek and receive treatment.
Absolutely. We just talked about that this morning.
Yeah. We need to treat drug addiction as a mental health issue and not as an illegal activity. Only by decriminalizing drugs can we break the back of cartels and drug dealers while getting addicts into recovery.
Amen. We've talked about that, you know, not just today, but other days. How, you know, and part of the problem is that our jails are mostly petty criminals with drugs. Well, I shouldn't say mostly, but a large number. And the jail system would collapse if we were to do this. So, you know, we need radical reform. In other words, we're a decaying empire. That's why we're seeing all these problems.
Yeah. Well, I certainly hope that something can be done because it's getting even hard for me to look at the news at all. But I am doing it. But when I saw what happened with the United Nations and Venezuela recently, when Pence came on into the United Nations in the Security Council and told directly to the Maduro representative of Venezuela that he should just get out. I mean, what? So they could bring in the self-chosen president who was never elected that we're backing. It's amazing. It was an amazing confrontation, but it really was.
Yeah.
Here's a very telling speech from Marianne Williamson, which she gave at a Mind Valley reunion this year.
We stand for love. But the love that will save the world is not just a love for our children. The love that will save the world is also a love for children on the other side of town and the other side of the world. There are millions of American children who go to schools every single day in buildings that do not adequately meet safety standards, some of which don't even have functioning toilets, in schools where the classrooms are not filled with the minimum school supplies necessary to teach a child to read. Now, these children, if they do not learn how to read by the age of 8, have a drastically decreased chance of graduating from high school, and they have a drastically increased chance of incarceration.
Many of these children, millions of them, live in what's called America's domestic war zones, where psychologists say they are experiencing a PTSD that is no less severe than the PTSD that is experienced by veterans returning from Afghanistan and Iraq. But a returning veteran has post-traumatic stress. These children have present traumatic stress because that stress is triggered and re-triggered every single day. Now, these children aren't old enough to vote, and so they aren't a constituency for the traditional political establishment to cater to. And they aren't old enough to work, so they don't have any financial leverage. So how can their views and their needs possibly be served? How can they possibly compete with the clout that is exercised by these huge corporate forces whose money so dominates our political system as to have turned our government into a system of legalized bribery? Now, if a person neglects a child in need, that person is called unethical at best and criminal at worst. So what do you call a whole society that is neglecting these children? And the question for us to ask as conscious people is, what does it say about me if I am saying nothing about these children? Yes. And the voice of enough of us, that is how things change. You know, when the issue of the children being separated from their parents at the border became such a big drama, and people said to people in the Trump administration, the journalist said, well, how do you ever think that you'd get away with this? And someone in the Trump administration said, we actually didn't think people would notice or people would care. You see, when people do notice and do care, we are good people. Americans are decent, dignified people, no less, no more or no less than people anywhere in the world. The issue, however, is that too many times and too chronically, we have addressed the issue of our goodness and our ethics only as it pertains to us personally and not how it pertains to the larger world. And anything that is happening to anyone, any public issue will ultimately get to your private door. If there's somebody on the other side of town suffering or someone on the other side of the world suffering because of the activities of your government, be very, very clear. These things should be seen as a canary in the gold mine. They will get to you. Good luck with all that green juice. Good luck with all that gluten-free. When they are gutting the Clean Water Act, they are gutting the Clean Air Act, and they are overturning the ban on pesticides that we absolutely know harm a child's brain. So as long as you're breathing the air and as long as you're drinking the water, all this health and wellness stuff is only going to be able to go so far. The question for us in the transformational field is, it's very nice that you want to address the symptoms of this insanity in your own life. The real issue is, are you willing to address it on the level of cause? Because if you are, you have a few things to say to chemical companies and oil companies and food companies and how the EPA operates. It's time for the American people to do what we've always done when we are at our best. And that's when we see certain things, we say as politely and kindly as possible, that shit stops now.
My company, New Galaxy Enterprises, is a California corporation specializing in the creation of media and promotional content. We are focused on original, innovative projects that are good for humanity. These projects could be nonfiction books or novels, fictional screenplays or documentary content, websites and website content, commercial advertising content for print, audio, or video products on the internet, television, or radio, musical scores for advertising, television, or film, video, audio editing, etc. We want to promote products and projects that support the environment, encourage a healthy experience in living, developing, nurturing, and useful technology, and offering platforms for positive, socially constructive entertainment or informative, transformative media. Our experience in creating a variety of products like this is rather vast, and we offer client-based and collaborative products, as well as the opportunity of active investors to join us in the creation and promotion of proprietary products, some of which are in latter stages of development. For more information, go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. That's www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. If you're interested in talking to us, just fill out the contact sheet and we will get back with you.
If you're not fond of books, you may be interested in watching Dr. Rodier's slide presentation on his website, hugorodier.com. That's H-U-G-O-R-O-D-I-E-R.com. It lasts 48 minutes and explains the simple roots of all diseases with pictures and graphs that are easy to understand. The presentation includes basic principles of physics, philosophy, anthropology, and history to truly integrate the most vital pillars of human health.
Before we end our program, let us hear some interesting insights from Marion Williamson in a little talk called Sickness.
I remember years ago, a doctor saying to me, "Marianne, you're not sick, but I wouldn't say that you're healthy." And when he said that, that really impacted my thinking, because theretofore I had thought of health as simply the absence of sickness. But of course, the last few decades, there's been a real shift in our attitudes about health and healing. We understand that health is much more than the absence of sickness, that in fact, what sickness is the absence of health. So you don't just wait till you get sick and fight the sickness. You proactively cultivate the conditions of health. And that is the shift that we're now making in our thinking regarding war and peace. You can't just wait till warlike conditions come about and try to slap them down. You know, if you take primarily a military perspective on problems such as terrorism, that's what you're doing. You're just zapping the cancer with radiation and chemo, as it were. But sometimes you're told by a doctor that the cancer you have is inoperable, that the cancer you have is systemic. And that's when you realize that you have to do more than just try to zap the tumor. You need to cultivate a higher level of immune functioning. You know, I think of World War II as a situation where you can liken the Japanese Imperial Army at that time and the Nazis to operable tumors. But terrorism is not an operable tumor. It's more like spider tumors that have wrapped themselves around healthy organs all over the system. It's metastasized throughout the body. So we have to raise our immune functioning. And society has an immune system, just as the body has an immune system. And one of the things that we've learned about the immune system of the body is that it responds to spiritual practice. I mean, the most prestigious academic institutions in the United States have now scientifically substantiated that people who have been diagnosed with life-challenging illnesses, who attend spiritual support groups, live on average twice as long after diagnosis. We now have the opportunity to move into a holistic model where we realize that you don't just heal the body, but you address healing in the mind and the spirit as well. Not just embracing a holistic model in medicine, but we can now embrace a holistic model in politics as well. We no longer look to the allopathic medical doctor and see that person as the be-all and end-all of our medical consultation. It is one element, and one element only. The traditional politician can be likened to the allopathic doctor. They basically are concerned with treating the effects of a problem. But if we really want to heal the society, just as if we really want to heal the body, we need to address root causes. The level of cause, not just the level of effect. And that is why creating community is the answer to the problems of the world at the deepest level. When you hear of cells of terror, for instance, it's like a chill goes up your spine. It's scary enough to hear about a terrorist. But when you hear about two or more terrorists together, that really gets you scared. That's because we instinctively know the power of people together. So the only real antidote to cells of terror is cells of peace, cells of love. And that is what community is. It's a place where people reach beyond the boundaries, and I don't mean healthy boundaries there, reach beyond the walls that the ego mind would construct to separate us. And that's the real peace building of our time, creating community. You know, if you look at a place like Israel, one of the great tragedies of the current situation in, with the Israelis and the Palestinians is that there have been people, both Palestinian and Israeli, who have worked so diligently over the last few years building community, building genuine peace among themselves. And, you know, it's very clear that both the majority of Israelis and the majority of Palestinians would really like to just live in peace. And what has happened there is what's happened on the planet, is that a relatively small group of people who represent hate-filled ideas have a kind of stranglehold on world events.
For more information about Dr. Rodier's practice, books, blogs, and newsletters, contact Hugo Rodier, MD, at www.hugorodier.com. That's HUGORODIER.com. We will now end with a spirit medicine healing song attributed to the Lakota Sioux. But before we play this, we'll repeat a YouTube comment by Chief Eagle Feather about this song. He cites this from an Ashoga Shiaash, an Apache prayer.
We cry out to you, Creator. Help us stand strong in these days of evil men who would profit from this pipeline at the expense of our lives, our water, our land. May you stop them and give us the hope that we may overcome the tide of wrongdoing to us. We pray that you will be strong and stop the band that is against us. Rise up, Creator, and send your guardians to stand alongside us and defeat the forces of evil and the program of the pipelines, and let them put it in their own backyards. Thank you, Creator. We stand in harmony with this prayer. May these toxic pipelines and all those obstructions to a healthy and natural environment cease forever.
Yo we know, 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 yo so many